walk, and I have another reason for walking today. I have a bad hip. So if I disappear for a moment, don't worry. I'll be back up in a few minutes. My friend Dave Nickel told me never get old, and that was one of the other pieces of advice he gave me that I put in the bin, and this time he was right. We are going to talk about genetic evaluations, and I had an outline and a bunch of slides that I thought were going to be informative, but actually I was going to follow this outline, and I ran into a problem as I started going down through it and thinking about what I wanted to say, and that is... So we got a couple of choices. I do have some slides. I could have Steve Radakovich come up and we can sing. My preference, however, is to show you an option. I'll work through some genetic evaluation history with you in terms of what you need to do a genetic evaluation that we can say is going to be effective in the population in terms of making change. Put out an option for you that I would like for you to consider and think about and challenge and debate. And you've actually been, you've been sensitized to this particular option in yesterday's presentation. So we'll go through this, and at the end, I'll ask you or challenge you to solve this problem with us in 4 years. Okay? Let's look at the fruit we're trying to harvest. We have done a very, very good job historically in data collection, genetic evaluation, and selection for weight. We're very good at collecting that information. We have all the appropriate models we need to analyze that information. It's heritable and it responds very well to selection. We've had moderate success in other areas. Calving ease and carcass quality are characteristics that we have evaluations for. You can start to see that there's a little degree of difficulty building when we start to talk about traits like carcass in terms of getting data. And if we were really to assess the beef industry, I think we would have to say we were rather, and have been rather, unsuccessful with those kinds of traits. Now we're starting to make some dents. We're starting to look at ways of getting there. Whole herd reporting is helping us in the reproduction area. We are doing something in the Carcass Merit Project with tenderness. We're having this symposium on efficiency, and we should be, in all honesty, looking into the area of health. This is what we need, and this is what drives change. We need data, and we've heard over and over again in this symposium the difficulty we have in obtaining the kind of data that you would need to do evaluations that relate to any of the measures of efficiency that have been defined and discussed in this symposium. We need it on pedigreed animals. We put it through a genetic evaluation system based on whatever methodology is appropriate for the trait, produce EPDs, you use them, and we see change. Another interesting part of the process that we've gone through historically is once we started producing EPDs, researchers started to test them. We saw many experiments being devised to look at how well do the EPDs actually predict the difference in traits like carcass or milk production or weight. That kind of validation gave us confidence, because most of them were successfully validated, gave us confidence that the data was good, the pedigree had its integrity, the system to produce the EPDs was reasonable, and we could make that change. I found it interesting that over the past years here at BIF, many of the focus of symposium were on that center part there, the genetic evaluation systems. And if you think about that, we had lots of data. We wanted to create systems that would allow us to get information out of that data, and we talked about it. We talked about threshold models and sire models and animal models. That's not the problem today. We have the technologies. We are able to convert data to information. What we're talking about now is this problem. And this really isn't a research problem. This is an industry problem. And I think if we're going to talk about feed efficiency and change it, reproduction and change it, health and change it, we have to start addressing some of the things Dave was actually talking about in the previous talk, and that is building infrastructure for data collection, databases to store those, ways to move that information around and get back to producers what they need to use. I said we are making progress. Total herd enrollment for those that are going to use it has been a big boon to things like evaluations for heifer pregnancy. Getting that kind of data will allow us to look at longevity a little bit more accurately. Carcass has always been an issue in terms of the number of records we can generate, and now we're using ultrasound to help us in terms of getting genetic evaluations for those characteristics. So we are having to think more and more, if we're going to start reach higher on that fruit tree, about what kinds of programs need to be in place to get that data. Many of the things that we will talk about as being important in these symposium, we don't have the data, we can't return EPDs, and the system stops. And some of the things we want to talk about today is how can we rejuvenate it so that we don't have to look at statements like the one Dave here reminded us of in terms of how long ago we knew there were genetic differences for intake and efficiency, and how little we've accomplished, if in fact it's important to select for, in the beef industry for that. Now, I would challenge that statement a little bit. There are some EPDs being produced. Beef Improvement Ontario has individual feed intakes taken. They do produce what they call crossbreed, adjusted for breed differences, EPDs, and do put them in some kinds of index and make them available on bulls that go through performance tests there. Now, whether that's translated to direct selection if people are using them, I don't know. So what are our options? Where are we going to go? How are we going to look at this problem and come up with something at least that we can test, something that we can work with and try and generate information that we can test both in the field and in research facilities? I'm going to talk a little bit about indicator traits for a couple reasons. They were discussed in previous talks, and I'm going to put up a few slides about them. They are useful when we have difficult-to-measure traits, expensive-to-measure traits, or even for traits that are measured late in life so that if we wait to measure them, the generation interval for selection increases, and we could do better if we had highly correlated traits to them in the beginning. So there is one option. Let's not even measure it. Let's not measure the trait that's so expensive and difficult to measure. Let's generate or utilize a battery of traits that are correlated to it, except the very low accuracies that Dave showed you you will get, even with data, it will be lower than that, the ones he was showing you. But utilize that, saying that is, on average, our best estimate of where these animals are based on correlated information. Here are some of the things that are being done that we might put in categories like that. Okay, here we have a system that's based on weight measurements, and we heard about it this morning, producing EPDs that can then be transformed into more valuable, at least in terms of understanding what we're trying to get at, EPDs in cow maintenance requirements. Okay, so here we have a system that utilizes some kind of information, translates it to a different kind of information for use in selection. And this is a very early start on this. There will be more added to it, I'm sure, and the system will evolve. We heard William talk about correlated traits, and Dave talked about them as well. We could build you a system for genetic evaluation that uses weight traits and carcass information, put in an effect for the EPD of a bull for feed efficiency, feed intake, whatever we wanted to predict there, and let the correlations provide us with an evaluation. If, in fact, we have sparse information, and that's what we will have, sparse information on actual intake, that would just go into the system as additional information to improve the accuracy. Okay, but most of the evaluation would come from the correlated traits. I'm going to propose another option that I think I'd like for us to try. In fact, we are trying. We're not doing well, but we're trying. You heard yesterday talk by Danny Fox, and in what he was presenting, he was showing you an area of research which is biological modeling, running experiments to understand various components of what an animal does, regardless of what we're modeling, and trying to describe that in mathematical terms so if you put in the right inputs, the outputs you get are reflective of a trait you wanted to measure. Okay, so let's think about that. Let's think about looking at the information for other traits and thinking about that information as a step to getting to the genetic evaluation. I heard Danny give that presentation a while ago, and I asked him, is that trait you predict, is that prediction you get, a heritable one? Okay? Is there genetic variation in the prediction that comes out of your equations? And we didn't know, and so we got to talking about it more and more, and I started thinking, let's put together a program where instead of the typical structure we have there, let's put a biological model in front of the genetic evaluation, use that biological model as Danny described yesterday, and the example I am using here is the Cornell Value Discovery System, and let's look to see what data does the biological model need to do a reasonable job of predicting a phenotype that we could use in a genetic evaluation. And if the data that are required are inexpensive, reasonable, then we can start to build volume. Okay, we can build the volume that's necessary to have a genetic program that can impact the industry. Well, if we're going to go to a predicted phenotype, the first thing we need to do is think about validation of that phenotype relative to what we're trying to predict. We've been through this. We struggled to get large volumes of carcass data, and so technology started to develop that allowed us to ultrasound the animals. And there were many, many reports throughout BIF over the years on how well the ultrasound did in predicting what it was supposed to predict. We did it with correlations. We looked at how correlated they were. Now we're even getting to the point where we're asking questions, if we measure ultrasound in breeding bulls, how correlated is that to their steer half-brothers? And we're getting fairly reasonable correlations out of those. The Angus range from 0.7 to 0.8. The Simmental we did also ranged in that area for the various paired traits in the system. Well, Danny's done some of that. He put up a slide yesterday that showed a 74% R-squared of the predicted phenotype to actual intake, measuring animals both for the intake they actually consumed and also looking at what his model predicted from the data he provided it. That's an 86% correlation between the predicted and the actual intake. When we start looking at these biological models, if we're going to actually put them out there to be used in this kind of context, and this particular model is actually being used in a different context in the industry, but if we're going to be doing this, it provides an opportunity with the kinds of data we could generate to actually go in and start to refine that model as we learn about the success it has in separating animals genetically. I don't know how much Danny covered this in his talk yesterday. I slipped out there for a while. Sorry, Dan. But this particular model, what I like about it is there are several components to it. One, you can predict and utilize the model in feedlot animals, and that's what he was emphasizing the other day, using the carcass data, the feedlot data, and other environmental parameters and things we'll talk about in a minute, to come up with a prediction of what that animal needed to eat to achieve that array of performance. But we can do the same thing, attempt to do the same thing, in breeding animals, substituting for carcass the ultrasound. And since 1994, the American Cemental Association has generated something like 6,000 carcass traits and 5,000 ultrasound traits. We just started looking at those in terms of a joint evaluation. Well, it would have been nice right now to have be able to go back and know what the feed was that was fed those animals and what other information we might have needed to have had a data set now to test how well this prediction would allow us to look at a trait like feed efficiency. Oh, and an aside down there, it also they have a model that does stuff in cow efficiency, and I guess they're going to pilot that at the, or pilot part of it at the Bell Ranch. We'll talk about that in a bit. So actually, what we end up with here is now two sources of data if we look at using the prediction model in each segment for potentially two sources for a sire. Slaughter progeny, and then those progeny that are being tested on the ranch. And Dave covered this in their program as well. Two separate sources of data. We ask the question, are they the same observation, same record, same trait being measured? And we did this with ultrasound and carcass again. Same kind of a situation. And if they're not perfectly correlated, then we'll take a multiple trait approach. We'll have some bulls that have only produced slaughter progeny, some that only have seed stock progeny, and some that have both. And we'll treat those in the seed stock component as one trait, and those from the slaughter sector as another trait, correlate them genetically, and put together a program of a multiple trait evaluation. That's exactly the carcass ultrasound model. Technologically, in terms of doing genetic evaluations and getting to this point, we can do it. This is not going to be something that's going to require a lot of methodological investigation. There will be some studying of models and everything, but it is following a very similar pattern as we see to previous research that we've looked at. What are we going to do? Well, here's what we are attempting. And again, I would like your feedback on this and conversation and thoughts on using these kinds of predicted observations in evaluations. We are currently doing a pilot study. We conceived the idea last fall, and so we hurried around. The Charlet Association said they would take a shot at this with us. Cup Lab said they would give us $1,000. So we all got together and decided that we would go ahead and take a look at this. And so we voluntarily, or we asked for people to voluntarily be part of this project. And originally we signed up something like 11 Charlet herds with 2,000 bulls and then some other producers that we knew would be interested as well, and some who have actually been collecting this kind of data already. The objectives is to get the genetic parameters for prediction for the predicted phenotypes, run them through a genetic evaluation program, and in the process of doing that, study the model that we would need to develop in order to provide EPDs over the course of the program. Like I said, we started with bulls on test this last fall. We're going to continue this project for 2 years, two more years, and we would really like to see if there are any other breed associations or producers who would be interested within those associations for collecting the kind of data we need. I should probably get you committed now before I show you what we need. Remember what I said in the beginning. We have essentially picked all the low-hanging fruit. You now are going to have to stretch and reach to get these traits that you want to investigate in your selection program. They're not going to come easy. Those are gone. The rest of them are going to take some effort. And you see the effort that's going on in Australia to get tests going in the intake as well. So it is going to take an effort. Before I tell you that list, I'll also tell you that we have a project going on with the Bell Ranch in New Mexico, and we're working a lot there with commercial calves. And the objective of that project is to set up a protocol for collecting data and doing progeny testing in commercial herds, even if they have multiple sire breeding pastures. One of the EPDs that we're interested in developing in this program is for the feedlot version of efficiency using predicted phenotypes. And we have a partner downstream who is willing to help us with this, and so we're pretty excited about that component of it. The first calves were born this spring, so we're not going to be doing this right away. I've complained a lot here of late that I've not worked actually with breeding a cow, getting a calf, and waiting to measure it. Questions in the past, we've had thousands of records and databases. If we had a question, we just went and got some data and answered it. So now I'm starting to match my retirement time to when these calves are going to calve for themselves fourth time. I'm not going to tell you much about the Bell Ranch project because this afternoon in the work prediction workshop or committee, there will be a presentation on that by Keith Long and Bob Weber. But we also have some information on this particular project at the website, thebellranch.com. This is high-hanging fruit. I keep saying that, but I want you to understand that if we're going to go after it, it's going to take a commitment. Okay, not so much of a commitment from us, because I think we have the technology ready to handle information coming to us, but a commitment from the industry to get the data. The reason that it's higher-hanging fruit is that the information that we need is much more comprehensive than running an animal across the scale, telling us its sex, and what management unit you fed it in. Okay, there's a lot more that's going to go on here that we need to gather in order to successfully predict those records. We have a protocol in the proceedings you can go look at to see what kinds of data and things that you would have to be involved in collecting. But if you remember from Danny's talk the other day, he uses environmental data. And the minute I saw that, I thought, well, this is a done deal. I've watched you all put in how much it rained yesterday in your little notebook, but I can't envision you going in every day and telling us what it did yesterday in the weather and if it rained and how muddy your lot was. But we found out since then that we can download from the National Weather Service that kind of information from the closest weather station or triangulate weather stations around any location. And so we can overwhelm Danny with environmental information that has to do with weather. Facilities, the type of facilities and other things he mentioned would have to be provided to us. Feed analysis. That's really not that hard, actually. Gather some feed and send it in, but it carries a little bit of a cost to it. Animal movement in and out is a big one. We're trying to measure the intake of the animals that are in the pen or predict it. And when an animal goes out or an animal comes in, we need to have certain information on that animal relative to that if we're going to successfully do it. And then total feed consumed is used by the program as a quality control check. Talking to the feedlot we want to send the Bell Ranch calves to, they collect almost all of this data anyway. So that's the positive side of it. Okay, on the slaughter calf side, a lot of this data is being collected. And they would be willing to get some of the other information to us if they had a way of capturing a return on that. This does bring up a problem, though. It does require those of us using this kind of data in genetic evaluations to start interacting with databases we really haven't had much interaction with in the past. All of our information, almost all of our information, comes from the seed stock industry. It comes from the seed stock industry through breed associations who manage the data. Now we're starting to look at more entities to go get the data from, bring in and use in the genetic evaluation, which wouldn't be a problem. But we also have to be aware of concerns of access and the property value. Oops. It's probably not a good thing. The intellectual property value of that information. Certainly, this is not the traditional kind of information that seed stock producers are providing us. Okay? It's much more intensive in terms of what is needed. But it would put us in this position. It would put us in the position to try and study the use of that kind of predicted observation, replacing what we know is difficult and expensive to measure, in terms of putting it through a system and computing EPDs. And if we pilot this on a small number of breeds, we would have EPDs at the end to go through the process we did 10 or 15 years ago, and that's validate what we've produced. We can take those individual sires who are diverse in whatever we are predicting relative to this predicted value, this predicted phenotype, and run them through and make very good use of those small number of individual feeding pens we have, run them through there to check to see, are we predicting what we think we are? And if we are, what changes are we actually causing in that animal? That can be studied. And those are the kinds of studies that went on before when we first started using EPDs. If we find that it's not predicting well what we hoped it would predict, then we can follow this process. Using that kind of information to go back and work on that biological model to improve the predicted thing that we're using and go through the process again. Now, prognosis. I liked Tom's comment the other day after talking to us about selecting animals that go once to the water feed every 48 hours instead of three times a day. I thought, this guy is the eternal optimist. What do I think? I'm going to do this. I lost a bet last night or something over a scotch. The future for this is so bright. I think it'll work. It has some value to it. We can validate it. We can validate the predicted observation, and we can validate the EPDs that come out the back end. We can make enhancements to the modeling and to the database in order to come up with better predictors once we start collecting the data. It puts us in partnership with another discipline, those people who are modeling the biology of the animal to help us understand where it's going. And we can generate volume. And everything we've seen today is an attempt to get as many animals measured as possible. And all of those attempts end up woefully short. I'm sorry, they end up woefully short of a national program. The strategy then goes to picking and choosing animals, which is the appropriate strategy if we're going to try and measure the trait directly. But if we can find a surrogate, we get the volume. And this is not a model that's alien to the industry. It is being used. It's being used to partition feed costs. And so there's experience with it out there. And if it's still being used, there must be some comfort level with it. So I think it will work. I wanted a second opinion, so I went to my friend Roy Wallace. And he gave me a ringing endorsement. Bob, you know Roy. That's ringing. Want to reach for higher fruit? We will devote the resources and time in the consortium and in Cornell to helping put together the protocols, collect the data, and analyze it. If you would be willing to look at these protocols and collect data for us. And I think with 3 years collection of data and another year or two validation of EPDs that come out of there, that we'll have an answer. Maybe a disappointing answer. But on the other hand, it may be a little bit of a glimmer of hope to it. And with that, I'll close.